Good morning, everybody, and welcome. It's Sunday morning here in London. It's just after 9 o'clock, and this is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and we are back. Lizzie, for the, I don't know why I'm still counting this, but I still think, I still enjoy knowing this, the 166th time that we've gathered for this. I don't think I've had 166 regular conversations with anyone, Lizzie. So, such a delight to be here, and I want to say on behalf of both of us, welcome to all of you, those of you who are joining us live on Facebook from all around the world. You're so welcome here, and also the many, many of you who listen at other times. So whether you're walking the dog or driving the car or tucked up in bed or on the sofa, wherever you are, you're so welcome to be with us. It's such a thing to have a regular practice, and I'm sure we'll get talking about practice today, but I'm feeling exceptionally grateful for it this morning.
Yeah, I'm feeling grateful too, Justin. And also, just to say, so good morning, everyone, from me. And this poem was sent to Justin and I a few days ago by somebody in our community, our kind of worldwide coaching community. And it also feels lovely to bring this because it comes from a place where people listen to us from all over the world who do the same kind of thing as us and who throw things our way when they think it might be a good source. And when people throw our sources that would work here, it kind of means that they really get the kind of thing that would work here. And so I really appreciate in this moment what it means to be in community and to be supported and to be helped and to be served with things. And today just feels like a dedication to that, really, that we're part of something much bigger. And I'm really grateful to all of you who are making that much biggerness so that we can all be a part of it together. It's really lovely. So we are going to read this as we usually do, and then we'll see whether the conversation takes us. This poem is called The Alive Ones by Caitlin Johnston. And it goes like this. The opposite of life is not death. The opposite of life is habit. One who moves from cradle to grave in the flipbook illusion we call time without deeply attending to this cavalcade of miracles is one who has never lived. Lifeless are they who live by habit, who walk by habit, who sit by habit, who see by habit, who think by habit, who feel by habit. Lifeless are they who drift through on dead patterns instead of giving omnipresent holiness its due reverence. The alive ones meet each moment like a dog greets its master at the door after work. They do not think, they wonder. They do not watch, they marvel. They do not walk, they adventure. They do not sit, they engage. They do not wait, they worship. Awe was never meant to be exceptional. Awe is the only sane response to this mess. The alive ones know this. The alive ones live this. The mundane does not exist for them. The ordinary is a fairy tale told by the lifeless, to which the alive listen with rapt fascination. They take in breath with the passion of a lover in bed. They entertain light in their retinas like a beloved guest. They merrily lose their war with the world. They dance without music in the frozen food aisle. They go out in the rain with bare feet and empty wine glasses. They greet every experience with exuberant curiosity. And as death approaches, it receives that same greeting. And when they are gone, those they leave behind will be saddened, but fulfilled, and so very grateful to have known one who truly showed up here.
So I'll read it to the alive ones. The opposite of life is not death. The opposite of life is habit. One who moves from cradle to grave in the flip book illusion we call time, without deeply attending to this cavalcade of miracles, is one who never lived. Lifeless are they who live by habit, who walk by habit, who sit by habit, who see by habit, who think by habit, who feel by habit. Lifeless are they who drift through on dead patterns instead of giving the omnipresent holiness its due reverence. The alive ones meet each moment like a dog greets its master at the door after work. They do not think, they wonder. They do not watch, they marvel. They do not walk, they adventure. They do not sit, they engage. They do not wait, they worship. Or was never meant to be exceptional, or is the only sane response to this mess. The alive ones know this, the alive ones live this. The mundane does not exist for them. The ordinary is a fairy tale told by the lifeless, to which the alive listen with rapt fascination. They take in breath with the passion of a lover in bed. They entertain light in their retinas like a beloved guest. They merrily lose every war with the world. They dance without music in the frozen food aisle. They go out into the rain with bare feet and empty wine glasses. They greet every experience with exuberant curiosity, and as death approaches, it receives that same greeting. And when they are gone, those they leave behind will be saddened but fulfilled and so very grateful to have known one who truly showed up here.
Receiving that from you, Justin, it felt like a breath of light came into my life. It's like somehow readdressing everything. This poem has the power to breathe life back into lots of things and to breathe hope, actually, I think, back to a lot of things. And to name things for what they are. And then bring holiness. Seems like a really excellent practice right now. So to name that there is a distinction between thinking and wondering, between watching and marveling. And for me, I'm recognizing that in the wondering and the marveling, this holiness is injected in there, this reverence, this awe can exist and breathe life into the very things that feel habitual. And so it feels like a lot's possible here because, of course, we're deeply habitual beings. And so where there is habit, there can be life breathed into a habit so that it can be brought to life more. So it feels like our habits might be the way in. Our habits could be the first step towards this reverence. And if we started there and let reverence hit our habits and imbue our habits, what kind of life might open up? What kind of doorways might present themselves for us to go through that bring the life of wonder, marvel, adventure, engagement, and worship? When I list those words, I think, this is quite something. Mm. So I feel really breathed into by this.
Yeah, I love the way you're talking about it, Lizzie. As I was playing with this poem in my mind over the last few days, I was wondering what it would mean to completely live without habit at all, because that would be one way of reading this poem. And I was thinking, okay, so I'm gonna have to get up out of bed in a different way every day, and I'm gonna have to make my breakfast, find a new way, fresh way to make my breakfast every day, and I'm gonna have to forget who I am and have different conversations. So I appreciate very much your bringing into this that the distinction between a kind of asleepness in life and a kind of aliveness in life isn't and can't be that we don't engage in what Caitlin Johnston calls the mundane or the ordinary. Because that way is a way of, in a way, is of escaping life. Like to really be in our lives means taking care again and again and again of the things that need taking care of. the dishes need washing and the beds need mm-hmm. making and the house needs cleaning and the people around us need caring for if we've got people around us, and we have to attend to, there's so much that we have to attend to. So it can't be the, it can't be as simple as just abandon your life, which would itself be another kind of abandonment, to go, well, I won't ever do anything habitual. So it has to be the way in which we come into the ordinary. And there's a word where she talks in the middle about the mundane. I often think that the mundane is such an interesting word, because the mundane is that of the earth. That's what it means. It means the world, the worldliness of the world. So in your way of speaking about it, Lizzie, I feel an invitation to come at what's here with, and the word you chose seems to me just the right word. It's such a great word for coming at a life with reverence. And she was thinking whilst you were talking about, you know, it's very fashionable to talk about mindfulness now, mm-hmm. something that was sort of marginal and has become sort of mainstream. And mindfulness can look like a way of escaping the realness and the suffering of the world. I'll sit on my cushion and I'll close my eyes and I'll breathe deeply and somehow I'll be freed of all of it. And I think reverence is a better word for what that practice, that set of practices is really for, which is, can we have practices in our lives that bring us squarely into contact with whatever is here, and which cultivate in us the possibility that we might approach the extraordinariness of it, whatever it is. And to come into life with reverence also doesn't mean turning away from suffering and grief and fear, and like we can grieve with reverence. We can feel afraid with reverence. I mean, even to have reverence towards the feelings that are arising in us with reverence, going, okay, so I have the kind of body that can feel this. That's to have been bequeathed this whole set of conditions is an extraordinary and unlikely something. I feel like I'm wanting in this way of talking about it to get out of any sense that what the poem invites us into is, if you do this, everything will be groovy. It has to be much more, there are different ways in being, of being in whatever it is that's going on, that we have, that we humans have choice. It's as Viktor Frankl says, that the one thing that we always have is choice over the relationship that we have to whatever circumstance that we find ourselves in. And that's what this poem is such a huge invitation to.
Yeah, so I'm noticing this as you're speaking, that I have a habitual fearful response to lots of things. Like when someone close to me is describing some difficulty that they're in, my habitual fearful response is, oh my goodness, you know, are you all right? What should we do? How is this going to be okay? And I'm noticing with what you're saying that one possibility that I could cultivate is to come at that process that someone's in with reverence, which is to say, how interesting, tell me more. What else can you tell me? And it's really difficult to do that when I haven't got this kind of presence cultivated. And of course those moments hit me at different times, like I've just woken up or something and there's something wrong, and it feels like in a way reverence has to become a habit, you know, reverence has to become a practice, reverence has to become an orientation that we cultivate, so that more and more we can turn towards things, as we always say, but also so that when these things arise, which they inevitably will, like you say, everything is mundane, really. Everything is the same thing again and again as we put our socks on or make a cup of tea or walk out of our front door. It feels like, for me, it's like, am I here or not? There's just so many ways I can just be not here. And in my here-ness, so much is available to me. So many options are available to be present, to be compassionate, to acknowledge something. But if I'm kind of away from myself, really the habitual response is fear. So this kind of coming home to myself, and the invitation I think that this poem is making, is to see what it means to greet, like a dog greets its master at the door, whatever is here. And it doesn't mean that I greet everything like panting like a dog, but it means I greet everything with newness. Because it's true that I don't know who you are today. I really don't. I know the things I've known before about you, but today you're a human. So you are different today. We're changing all the time. I have my little one-year-old Vespa at the moment. The rate that she's growing at is also the rate that we're aging at. You know, it's like that things are happening all the time so quickly. And we're regenerating ourselves. We're being affected by things, by people, by the world, by light, by dreams, process, everything. And so it really is, I think it says it somewhere in here as well, it really is an appropriate response. Because that's the nature of life, is proportionate to awe. Life and awe feel like they are proportionate to one another. And so for us to greet life with awe is to recognize what life really is. Whatever it is. And some of that might have pain inside of it and sadness inside of it and confusion and distortion and difficulty and all the things. And some of it might have delight and wonder and joy and the full spectrum. But all of it gets to be greeted by awe. All of it can be welcomed. All of it can be made space for, with open, eager, dog greeting its master at the door eyes. And I think that's what this is really speaking about, is an energized openness that allows our eyes to open really widely to what the washing up looks like, to what cleaning the fridge out looks like, to what doing the same car journey again and again and again looks like. And I just feel like, in a way, this is speaking of the third space again, the place, the third space that's not this and it's not that, it's something more central, and that's who we are, and that's how we can bring ourselves, and how we can also join together in community to talk about that third thing, that then we might have a sense of what it is that we can cultivate together.
I think there's, in one way or another, what we're talking about here is ways in which we contract away from life or enter into life. So there's so much in Caitlin Johnston's words that's on the side of contracting away from life, is when we treat ourselves and life as if we were objects, and we protect ourselves from life.
Mm.
And that our entry into the third thing, the is an entry into that of us. It's a cultivation of that of us that can pay attention.
Yeah.
Which is what I think so much practice, there's so many different kinds of practice we can have that can do that, that can, you know, when you were talking about being afraid, and you were wondering about coming into that with curiosity, it struck me that for all of us, the afraid parts of ourselves will still be afraid. So the move here isn't, can I banish my fear? It's much more like, yes, but what can I be in contact with and maybe even look out at the world from that of me that is wide open and curious and reverent to life itself, because it is life itself. Can we find what is of us that is life, looking out at life? And then we have more of a capacity also to go, gosh, I can see that I'm afraid, and that's not all that there is here. There's another part of me that's curious, and that really is possible to practice. And it's also very hard because we have really good reasons why we contract away from life. Like we've had to do that, all of us, at various times in our own lives, when what was happening for us was too much for us. And it's a completely ordinary response to being overwhelmed by the experiences that we're having, that we contract away. And so we can, the benefit of that is that sometimes it keeps us safe, but the cost of it is we can go through our whole lives that way, like protected, and never really living. And in fact, I think one of the things that we're protecting ourselves from is this thing that she says at the end that is breathtaking and arresting and inviting, I find, and challenging, which is to greet every experience with exuberant curiosity, including death. And because there's a part of us that's always so frightened of that, I think many of us choose to go through our lives more on the contracted away side, because then I won't have to experience any of this. I won't have to experience loss, and I won't have to experience pain, and I won't have to experience fear. The risk it seems to me in words like this is that when we know ourselves as alive, we get into imagining that we're better. Oh, I'm the alive one, and you, Lizzie, you're the dead one. So I'm far superior to you. Look at me. And the antidote to that is in the mundane, which is knowing that I'm really no different. Like I'm completely with you that what you said is we don't know one another this morning. You're different and I'm different, and we know our histories and we know our cares and commitments to one another. But I don't know you this morning in the way you'll be different. But it's also true that we're also really the same, that anything that I'm getting to feel, you've probably got to feel. And if you didn't get to feel it, somebody else has felt it. Whatever I'm experiencing, other people are experiencing. So our aliveness to ourselves is also a way of showing us quite how ordinary and non-separate we are from everybody and everything. We start to get, oh, this pain I'm feeling, billions of people around the world are probably feeling something quite like this now. And if they're not feeling it now, they felt it 5 minutes ago. Can wake us up to all of that as well.
Yeah, and I feel really enhopened by this feeling, Justin, where you're saying these things can wake us up, because as you're saying all of this, I can see that actually my reactivity is a gift. You know, that triggeredness, that horrible thing that happens to us when we're in reaction to something that's hurting us or annoying us or frustrating us or riling us, whatever the thing is. It could be that that is, and I'm saying this because this happened to me the other day, where I was really triggered by something and it didn't take long for me to catch myself and know that there was another place to look other than the place I was looking. And it really kind of stopped me in my tracks. And I think I was having a conversation with Matthew and he was telling me something that he was afraid of. And I got really afraid because he was afraid. And I could see that in that moment, I had kind of slipped in with him into the fearfulness. But it didn't take long for me to realize there was nothing to be done about it. That he was just trying to tell me how he felt. But I was listening from a place of fear, as if there needed to be something fixed. And really quite quickly, I came round to going, oh, hold on a second, I think I should have just been listening to him telling me some feelings, but I got it wrong. And in a way, it kind of illuminated how inappropriate sometimes my responses can be. If I'm afraid, it's actually not, I'm actually not responding. It's actually not, I'm not in relationship with the life that's coming forth to me. I'm kind of bounced away back by it or something, but I'm not really responding. And so I could see that I hadn't really responded, but I had reacted. And it really showed me that in that moment, I can move deeper and deeper in myself to cultivate a way of coming in response to things that actually would generate a really different conversation, a really different experience for Matthew, a really different experience for me. And when you were speaking just then, I was feeling that our reactions, our habits, can be really important invitations. Like if we treat them as invitations to seeing that there is a third space, that there is presence, that there is 100 different positions I could come from right now. Even entertaining that is helpful, because our habitual, fearful, anxious, reactive response can feel like such a dead end sometimes. Like, here I am again. I'm doing the same thing again. Why do I always do this thing in arguments? Why is this the argument that always happens? And so, of course, you know, we can fail at this a million times for the one time that we can find the opening and take the opening. And it's one thing to see something and it's another thing to act upon it. But unless we see, we would never have the chance to act. So even just the possibility of seeing our reactivity, seeing our fearfulness, seeing that there's something that we're doing that's not the only option. Because I think also when we're reactive, it feels like that's the only possible reaction. That's the only possible response there is right now, is this one, thank you very much. I'm right about the response that I'm making right now. And of course, I'm not really responding at all. I'm just reacting. I'm just in a kind of ping pong match or something. It's not really a response. And so to take our reactivity, to take that feeling inside of annoyedness, triggeredness, fearfulness, whatever the thing is, and see it as an invitation to something greater, something more, something broader, something more expanded, softer even. That seems really helpful to me in this moment, so that I can integrate this understanding of wholeness and something larger, a bigger range of responses being available to me. It feels like I can practice with that. I can learn from it.
I've been thinking as you've been speaking, Lizzie, that the language of parts is really helpful here. You know, that there are parts of us that get afraid and parts of us that get reactive, and that when we engage with the world, with our own lives, with other people from this place of there is only one, the thing that you said when we're reacting, which is there's only one thing that's true here and it's this, and we're really certain. I think it can help us to remember that that might be a protector or defensive part of ourselves, that a reactive part of ourselves that's doing that. Because when we remember that way, then we don't have to fight ourselves. We don't have to banish our reactive parts. Instead, what we can do is we can go, you know what, there's something of me, because there's something of all living things, all of us, that is way wider and way deeper than this reactive part. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes possible to practice dropping into the aliveness that we are. You can actually learn over time to catch this more often. Mm-hmm. And to be able to go, hey, reactive part. Mm-hmm. To cradle the reactive parts of us lovingly, and to get, as you're saying, they have great gifts in them, and not try and banish parts of ourselves, which is another way of going to sleep, but instead sort of bring in the deeper aliveness that we are, the sort of wide-eyed, all the words that Caitlin Johnston uses, that that of us which can wonder and marvel and engage and be reverent and is gets the holiness of everything and is timeless, that of us when we're able to be in contact with it, that that's from where we can feel and see our reactive parts more, and we have much more of a chance of engaging and doing exactly what you said in your when you're describing talking with Matthew, is what's the thing that's really called for here, like what's life-giving and loving and nurturing and reverent and and one of the troubles that we have is that we don't often understand ourselves this way as being multidimensional, that there's something always of us that is outside of the thing. The thing that we're experiencing is not the whole thing.
Yes.
There's way, way, way more of us. Where in our vast landscape will we come from? Where in our vast landscape will we respond to the thing that's happening? That's a choice. We have to know that we have a vast landscape. Even to begin to feel that is so liberating. And we're always going to be in this dance of awake and asleep and awake and asleep. That's the other thing. I don't think that there are so many of us who, in Caitlin Johnston's words, are the alive ones, like who never react and never fall into asleepness. No, it's much more a dynamic moving between one and the other that we're in all the time.
Well, I feel like this is a lovely place to conclude, Justin, where we're speaking about our vastness, and there's this huge landscape that often becomes invisible to us, and that we dance between being able to see the landscape and find the place we wish to respond from versus feeling blinded and small and reactive. And just to be in the conversation about that opens up the possibility for that being true for all of us. So it's a really lovely, lovely thing. And just to say again, thank you to the person who brought this poem to us. He's from Canada, and I feel like you may listen too. And so thank you. And thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you for being here and being in this opening with us, in this learning with us. And we will be back next week on Sunday, as usual, with a different source and more conversation.
Yes, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Lizzie, as always.
Yeah.
Bye.